vaikust , vaikust saalis , vaikust saalis . eetris on Kübercast . seekordne saade tuleb inglise keeles . And now I am fluently switching to English . Today we are talking about lockbit . And what happens if we don't keep our systems up to date ? It seems too much work sometimes and things seem to work just fine without it . And well, even the biggest and most influential ransomware services like Lockbit can be taken down due to laziness and not updating their servers on time. And this is what this episode is about. So, navigating in the shadows, the rise, the fall, and complexities of Lockbit ransomware, together with our guest Alexander. This recording is done via MS Teams, and here's it for you.
Today on the show, we need to talk about cybercrime in its baddest form, and that's called organized. Lockbit has been taken down, or has it? It is something that has been around since 2019 or something, and it's really a secretive thing. So we will start the topic of Lockbit. We will explore the insides of Lockbit, what it is, the takedown of it, and the possible future events that may follow. So I am Ronnie Arnhold. I'm from Cybers. And today we have on the show a person from the front line, our feet on the ground, as I say, Alexander Leslie. Alexander Leslie is a threat intelligence analyst with the Advanced Cybercrime and Engagement, the ACE team, at Recorded Future. His research is primarily focused on the intersection of US national security, Russian politics, and Russian language cyber criminal underground. So welcome to the show, Alexander, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If you like this episode, feel free to listen to all of our other episodes as well. And please like, subscribe, comment, feedback, and give us feedback on how we are doing. But I don't want to spend too much time on this. I would like to dig into the topic at hand. So, Alexander, thank you for coming to our show. Would you please explain to our listeners what is it that you do exactly? So what is the ACE team?
Yes, so the ACE team, or Advanced Cybercrime and Engagement, is part of INSICT Group within Recorded Future. INSICT Group is Recorded Future's research arm, and Recorded Future, of course, is the world's largest intelligence company. So my day-to-day as part of the Advanced Cybercrime and Engagements team involves two things, cybercrime and engagements. So I'm primarily doing cybercriminal research on dark web sources. These are including like dark web and special access forums, dark web marketplaces, dark web shops, ransomware extortion blogs, everything that you think about when it comes to threat intelligence and cyber criminal threat intelligence. And I'm also conducting engagements. So as part of the ACE team, we maintain clandestine personas on dark web sources that we use to elicit human intelligence directly from cyber criminal threat actors. We don't really delve much into state-sponsored threats. We don't really delve much into influence operations, but non-state actors, including hacktivists, ransomware groups, data leak groups, data extortion groups, even groups that aren't doing this for a financial motivation, but are doing crime just for fun. That's the kind of stuff that we're looking for on the ACE team. So we're primarily looking for human intelligence and proprietary human intelligence that we can provide all of Recorded Future's private and public sector clients.
So you gathered this information primarily for the use of service of your customers, and how much do you work with law enforcement agencies and such?
Yeah, you know, I won't speak too much to the relationship with law enforcement, but I will say that Recorded Future services private sector clients and public sector clients located around the world as to include law enforcement. We as researchers, have to practice due diligence, right? If we see something that is actionable on dark web sources that requires notification that is out of our control, then that's something that you would typically escalate to law enforcement either in the US or located somewhere around the world in the jurisdiction that it applies to. That just not only comes with obligations as being part of Recorded Future, but that's just basic responsibility, basic due diligence. If you're seeing something that is not disclosed, that's not publicly reported, if you're seeing something that affects a victim and that victim might not know, or that victim operates in critical infrastructure, that is something that you need to escalate immediately just as a responsible researcher. So the relationship with law enforcement is more of a proactive one than it is reacting to any news, than it is collaborating. It really, much like the rest of the threat intelligence industry, relies on us being proactive, being responsible, and practicing due diligence and working with law enforcement to get them actionable intelligence to make decisions that we might surface that they don't have.
Mm-hmm. So cybercrime is well organized, and today we are doing this opening session to discuss something that has been on everyone's mind from the year 2019. So we dig into Lockbit, and we want to discuss further onto the show. We want to discuss the takedown of Lockbit, but we have to appreciate that not all of our listeners know what is Lockbit and what it is. What is Lockbit?
Yes, so Lockbit is a ransomware group, plain and simple. It started in approximately September 2019. It was first publicly disclosed, so it announced its first advertisement on dark web forums in December of 2019. It operates what is called a ransomware as a service program. Now, what that means is, like, think of software as a service. You're going to be renting a license to an administrative panel, a downloadable, something that you're going to buy from an organization. This is what Lockbit did on the dark web. Lockbit operated a program where affiliates or buyers could pay them for a software license key, for an administrative panel, for their ransomware that Lockbit had developed. So in a way, it kind of spread very quickly on the dark web. You see a lot of advertisements popping up for Lockbit. You see them posting victims at an exponential rate. We track approximately 2,300 victims over Lockbit's existence, and those are just the ones that are publicly disclosed. When we're thinking about Lockbit right now, what we're thinking about is Lockbit 3.0, or the third iteration of Lockbit. So Lockbit has gone through three different iterations since this launch in September 2019. Lockbit 1 was relatively uninteresting. A lot of researchers described it as repurposing code, repurposing TTPs from other ransomware groups that were popular at the time, groups like Maze, groups like Revil. Lockbit 2.0 relaunches, it launches with a new builder, it launches with updated infrastructure, and it starts to gain a lot of traction. So when Lockbit 2.0 launches, it's kind of competitive with other major ransomware as a service groups like Conti, right? Groups like Black Matter and DarkSide. And then we get Lockbit 3.0 in June of 2022. And Lockbit 3.0 is kind of the fully formed version of Lockbit. There are multiple different Lockbit builders for its ransomware built on the source code of different ransomwares that have already existed. There are a whole bunch of affiliate accounts. I think the last we were aware, and based on what was disclosed by law enforcement, there were at least 194, if not 200 different affiliate teams working for Lockbit. The scale of this is pretty immense. So In those 5 years, it's crazy. So in those 5 years, you have 2,300 victims. You have roughly 57% of them located in the United States. And we can talk more about that later, but that was a deliberate action on behalf of Lockbit. Majority of victims were located in like manufacturing, education, healthcare, law, construction, typical industries that are targeted by ransomware, you know, industries that make a kind of a big splash in terms of the news or have like a lot of kinetic effects, but like aren't huge, huge, like taking down a federal government, right? Like, so kind of that mid-tier industry tag that a lot of ransomware groups target. But yeah, it's kind of incredible what we've seen from Lockbit in those 5 years is growing from a very small group on the dark web that really wasn't taken seriously in late 2019 to the single biggest ransomware as a service group and I guess ransomware cartel that exists on dark web sources by 2024.
So kind of the if it owns this big of a market share and it is so successful, so why are they so effective and how does it differ?
Yeah, so the thing that really makes it effective is the fact that it's open. So there's a distinction in ransomware between whether a group is opened or closed. And when we say that, are we referring to like, you know, its leadership structure, its affiliate structure? What we're kind of talking about is whether a group is secretive and insular or whether a group has been soliciting affiliates on public sources. So Lockbit is an open group, which means that it openly recruits. It openly allows affiliates to apply for an affiliate panel. It openly allows strangers that haven't been vouched for on dark web sources to submit deposits to become affiliates. It has advertisements. It has publicly accessible points of contact. Right, you see the administrator of Lockbit, Lockbit Sup, or Lockbit Support, openly maintaining a public talks account and talking with researchers and journalists all the time. Lockbit is an open group, which means effectively anyone can apply to become a member of Lockbit. This differs from a group like, say, Akira, right? Or Play or Black Suit. These are ransomware groups that cause a lot of news, but are closed. They do not recruit, they do not advertise, they do not maintain public-facing points of contact. Now, the reason Lockbit was able to grow into this massive operation that you described is because of the fact that it wasn't very judicious with how it like vetted affiliates, right? It really took anyone at points. There were moments where it was more closed than others, where Lockbit would require deposits of Bitcoin, sometimes $50,000 to $100,000 in Bitcoin in order to become affiliate. But like generally speaking, anyone could apply, and just based on the mood of Lockbit Sup that day, you could or could not become an affiliate. Now, these affiliate teams, the people that are actually conducting the attacks, it might be one person, it might be five people, it might be 10 people, it might be 10 people plus five initial access brokers and an info stealer operator and someone that they're leaking data to on exploit forum. Like, it could be a huge operation in that affiliate team in itself. So Lockbit opening itself up to hundreds of affiliates as recently as the takedown, almost 200 individual affiliate teams, then you add together all of the affiliates in those 200 teams and you get a sprawling operation because of how open Lockbit was.
Mm-hmm. So it's like good marketing or kind of open to anyone, let's say. Yeah. But how do they make money? Okay, I understand that the kind of operation is spread out, and I understand that there is a core team that is managing the core software, let's say, and affiliates join in on it. But how does the whole flow look like, and where does the money come from, and how is this money being distributed, and these all sorts of questions.
Absolutely. So the finances are really interesting when it comes to Lockbit. Lockbit, we generally consider to be a bit of an erratic actor. We don't necessarily know how or why they set certain ransom payment deadlines or why they set certain ransom floors and ceilings for prices. But generally speaking, how Lockbit makes money is that the affiliate will conduct an attack. So you have, like you said, the Lockbit core team and the development team. They will rent out their infrastructure to the affiliate. The affiliate will conduct the attack. They will exfiltrate the data. They will encrypt. Then they will start negotiations with a potential victim. That ransom payment that they will offer from like that double extortion model, right? So when I say double extortion, that means stealing data in the first place before encrypting so that you can publicly extort the victim, posting leaked data on a dark web extortion blog. So the affiliate will do that. They'll steal the data. They'll encrypt it. They'll begin the negotiation with the potential victim. And then they'll usually set a ransom roughly between 10 and 20% of the annual revenue of that victim. So that can be a lot of money. Like depending on if it is a small to medium-sized business that's got $5 million in annual revenue, okay, $500,000, right? Like that's a generally acceptable price that a ransomware affiliate would take for a small to medium-sized business. If you're looking at a massive organization that's got billions of dollars in annual revenue, it becomes a little more flexible to the point where that 10 to 20% rule, that doesn't really exist anymore because we're kind of looking at how much can we extort this massive multinational entity and like what is the most we can get out of it. So that's when you're going to be seeing ransom demands that are upwards of $10, $20, $30 million for organizations that have revenue in the billions or have global presences. So what will happen is that payment will be extorted. Whether it is $500,000, $1 million, or $10 million, the affiliate will get that. And then a portion of that is kept by the affiliate, but then a portion is paid out to Lockbit. So that's kind of their kickback. That's kind of how the whole racketeering scheme is allowed to exist. Lockbit will rent that infrastructure out. Yes, the affiliate did all of the work. The affiliate did all of the encryption. They were doing all of the network exploitation. So everything you think about with the ransomware kill chain, everything from reconnaissance to impact, that was all the affiliate team. But then Lockbit will demand a percentage of that because Lockbit maintains the infrastructure. Lockbit maintains the tools. So the Lockbit ransomware builder is developed by Lockbit. The Steelbit exfiltration tool is developed by Lockbit. All of the file hosting infrastructure is developed by Lockbit. So Lockbit themselves will say, we are entitled to a certain portion of this ransom payment. And that usually depends on the affiliate itself. So we don't have much visibility into that because that is something that happens behind closed doors. But if it's a professional team, someone that's part of that core team of Lockbit professionals, the professional pen testers is usually what they call them. Those teams will usually be keeping, you know, roughly the guess is 50 to 80% of that payment, depending on who the affiliate is. If you are not vouched for, if you have a deposit on your account, if they don't know who you are, that share might be much smaller for the affiliate. But that's generally speaking, that's the financial structure. We do see Lockbit engaging a little bit in initial access. Now, what that means is that they'll gain access to an organization and sell that on the dark web. We do sometimes see Lockbit affiliates engaging in data leak activities. So selling databases on dark web forums, selling databases for forum credits. So this is a big thing on English language forums is instead of paying directly, going through escrow, you know, paying in cryptocurrency, you buy forum credits that you can download databases. We see Lockbit affiliates doing that kind of stuff, but that financial gain is usually just for the affiliate itself. Financial structure for Lockbit is deposits and it's on ransom payments.
So this this raises many questions for me. So in that field of work, you don't have legal binding agreements, and you cannot go to court when some of your affiliates go rogue. Yep. So how do you control everything? How does control happen?
That is a great question. And I think the answer is there is no control. Because what we see with the precedent, not only of Lockbit, but of its competitors, what we're seeing unfolding right now, you know, it's March 5th, what we're seeing unfold with Alpha Black Cat right now, which seems to be an exit scam, right? One of the biggest ransomware groups that has ever existed alongside Lockbit 2 weeks after the Lockbit seizure, just like is exit scamming and kind of leaving the threat landscape completely empty. This doesn't really, there's really nothing that you can predict about the behavior of cyber criminals. There's nothing that you can really say about Lockbit that says, okay, are you going to act in an honorable way and pay out your affiliates fairly? Are you going to pay for tools fairly? Are you going to honor your commitment to victims to actually delete data after they've paid a ransom? We know that's not true, right? Because the NCA 2 weeks ago, when Operation Kronos was announced during that press conference, said that we have evidence showing very plainly that Lockbit did not delete any data and they re-extorted after victims paid ransom. So when you don't have this checks and balances, when Lockbit is not accountable to a higher power, when there is no legally binding authorities that come with being a ransomware group, you know, you really have to take them at their word. And the problem is ransomware groups are not authoritative sources. Cyber criminals are liars. So like when you are trying to take these ransomware groups at their word and say like, okay, Lockbit is putting out a statement. They're saying, this is how the law enforcement action happened. This is, you know, the effects. We'll be back soon. You know, I am going to speak, Lockbit speaks about how they were actually, you know, taken down by law enforcement, talking about these PHP vulnerabilities and talking about having a mole in their operations and stuff. We don't know if any of that's true. Right, because Lockbit is known to lie a lot. Lockbit lies to journalists. We see Lockbit on social media all the time speaking to researchers and journalists saying things that are plainly false. We see them in that statement in response to the law enforcement action saying that the reason the FBI took them down, and it wasn't even the FBI, it was the NCA in the UK, they're saying the reason the FBI took them down was because they stole information related to the 2024 presidential election in the U.S. related to like former president Donald Trump. Like that's the reason why it doesn't make any sense, right? So liars, you know, kind of silly in some of their statements, but like if you can't even trust them to put out a public statement that makes sense, imagine what the affiliates have to deal with behind the scenes when they're like, hey, I deserve a 20% cut, and Lockbit's like, no, you don't. I'm taking 100%. What happens is that person goes on to XSS, they go on to Exploit, they go on to Ramp, they go on to any other Russian language forum and say, Lockbit scammed me. And then Lockbit, like as we saw last month, gets banned on all of those sources. There is no checks and balances, there is no oversight. So cyber criminals will do what cyber criminals do. They will cheat and scam their own workers out of fair dues.
That's bad for business, I would say, in a kind of long term.
Incredibly bad for business, and honestly, like probably part of the reason that Lockbit had its downfall. Because we look even on that repurposed seized Lockbit extortion blog that was put up on the dark web. Kind of when law enforcement seized that infrastructure, put up all of those posts that had different information, different links to different law enforcement resources. One of the links wasn't even a link about information related to law enforcement at all. It was a meme about Lockbit getting banned from Exploit, getting banned from XSS, and then getting banned from its own servers. So it's Lockbit like, or it's law enforcement kind of twisting the knife in Lockbit by saying, you know, we know that your reputation matters a lot to you. We know that your business is entirely predicated on the fact that you have credibility. It's predicated on the fact that you have reputation on cyber criminal forums. You don't even have that anymore. Therefore, there's nothing to rebuild your credibility.
So just to come a bit closer to us. So we operate in Baltics. In the eastern part of Europe, what kind of shareable data do you have, or what you can give about Lockbit activities or known victims in our area?
Yes, so it's very interesting when it comes to the Baltics and the Nordic states with regards to Lockbit. So over those 2,300 victims that we identify in that 5-year period, we attribute zero publicly attributable zero to Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Now, there's a reason for this. A lot of ransomware groups, including Lockbit, have an unwritten rule that you cannot target entities located in the former Soviet Union. Does not matter if they are members of the Commonwealth of Independent States or not. Does not matter if, like the Baltics, they're members of the EU and NATO or not. There is something cultural that ties together these states in the eyes of a ransomware operator and in the eyes of Lockbit. And therefore, you know, also probably there's a significant Russian-speaking diaspora in these three states as well. Therefore, Lockbit itself has self-imposed rules that says, effectively, you cannot target former Soviet countries. Like, the formal rule is the CIS, but we know that that's not true because we look at some of the ransomware builders. Usually they have anti-CIS strings, so like the ransomware will detonate or the malware will detonate on a device if it has Russian installed as a keyboard. Those anti-CIS strings, they expand to effectively every major country in the former Soviet Union. There's, of course, it'll self-destruct if you see Georgian, self-destruct if you see Kazakh, Armenian, Azeri. It'll also self-destruct if it sees Estonian, Lithuanian, or Latvian. Generally speaking. So that's kind of the reason why we see nothing in the Baltics. It's a cultural rule, and it's also kind of written into Lockbit's affiliate structure. Now, interestingly, is you kind of cross the Baltic Sea to the Nordics, and you do see a significant amount of victims. So you see over those 2,300 victims, like I said, these numbers are going to seem small, but they're really not, considering almost 60% of the victims are based in the United States. But you're going to see three from Finland, nine from Sweden, four from Norway, and seven from Denmark. So in total, over 20 victims that you see in the Nordics. And this is just under reporting, right? This is just based on publicly disclosed victims, either through open sources or on the Lockbit extortion blog. The real number might be much, much higher. Now, the reason this is existing and the reason you see that very clear dichotomy as to why you see victims in the Nordics and not in the Baltics is because of those affiliate rules for Lockbit that effectively bans any targeting period of any entity in any industry located in any state of the former Soviet Union.
This is really interesting, and of course that the numbers from Scandinavia or the Nordics, it comes from publicly disclosed. So these are kind of open and known. The kind of organizations have came out and told about their customer experience, how to say that, in a sense. Okay, The takedown of Lockbit, so it's a chapter on its own, right? And the kind of event started to unwind a couple of weeks ago. What events and how did came to the shutdown? Let's say.
Yeah,
it isn't shut down, but.
Yeah, it isn't shut down. Well, we could talk about that in a second, but is it shut down or not? That's a big question. But, you know, Operation Kronos has clearly been in development for a long time. Law enforcement says that it's been in development since late 2022. That's a long time to be developing a law enforcement operation, right? So they had been planning this takedown for effectively 2 years at this point, almost 2 years. This was a massive international effort. So you see those flags and those agencies, you know, kind of all over that seizure banner, that splash page. We're seeing the involvement of over 10 countries, a dozen private sector entities located around the world. So you see reports released in conjunction with law enforcement from like ProDAF, from Trend Micro, from other private sector entities. This is a massive public-private partnership. International operation and very clearly demonstrates the value of kind of interagency communication around the world. So, okay, we have all these agencies. We have this operation that's been planned since 2022. What actually are the deliverables? We see about 34 servers seized. Okay, so That's a significant amount of infrastructure. That infrastructure hosts all of the blogs. It hosts kind of things like the Steelbit exfiltration tool, which we can talk about in a second. It hosts the leaked data. That's kind of what we're seeing out of 34 servers. So it takes down effectively Lockbit's entire dark web infrastructure, all of the mirrors of its extortion blog and its file hosting blog on the Tor network. We see two arrests take place in Ukraine and Poland at the request of the French police. Now, the question is why were these individuals arrested? Well, if it was at the request of the French police, it likely had to do with an attack based in France, right? That's the kind of jurisdiction. We could speculate on what that attack was. I don't think anyone knows for sure at this time, but French police send out a bunch of requests for arrests in Poland and Ukraine. We see three arrest warrants issued, five indictments issued, 200 cryptocurrency accounts frozen. That's a lot of money that was seized. So, you know, Chainalysis does a good job of kind of looking into some of the Lockbit wallets. We don't really know the full total at this moment, but it is in the hundreds of millions of dollars in ransom payments, affiliate payments, payments from other sources, and so forth. So, sprawling amount of money that's been identified and allegedly frozen. They shut down 14,000 accounts associated with exfiltration. So this includes like ProtonMail accounts, Mega Upload accounts, so Mega.nz accounts. It includes a number of accounts on file sharing services, you know, negotiation accounts, accounts that you would negotiate with via email, effectively accounts, period, on web services that were associated with Lockbit. 14,000 of them were shut down. And then kind of the most important part, Lockbit loses its decryption keys. So in order to decrypt that ransomware, you need to, of course, make a ransom payment or do a negotiation and receive that decryption key so that you can unencrypt your files. Law enforcement receives approximately 1,000 of these. So that's 1,000 decryption keys for 1,000 unique victims. And in conjunction with Japanese police, they release a decryption tool, an open source decryption tool that allows you to decrypt Lockbit 3.0. This basically destroys the business model, right?
Yeah.
If Lockbit looks is like dependent, it does, right? So if Lockbit is dependent on, if they're dependent on encrypting victims and they're dependent on extorting ransom payments, if the ransomware doesn't work, then you can't really do that. So not only does the ransomware not work, but their bespoke exfiltration tool, Steelbit, was disrupted. So you can't even exfiltrate data and upload it to the blog. The blogs themselves are seized and under the control of law enforcement, and all the money is seized. So the operation itself looks like it's been completely dismantled at this point. It is really like looking back on the last year to 2 years of law enforcement action targeting ransomware groups. Think about Ragnar Locker, Hive, you know, you get one or two arrests, right? You get an infrastructure takedown in somewhere in Europe. You get some sanctions on the group itself or members of the group. You don't really see anything as comprehensive as this, right? It's like law enforcement really took the lessons of every single past ransomware seizure, and they're like, okay, sanctions work, arrests work, even if we can't extradite them, indictments work, seizures work, you know, seizure banners are interesting, we have to make fun of them with memes and jokes. Like, they really took every single strategy and pulled every policy lever internationally to really have the most comprehensive dismantlement of a ransomware group we have seen yet, which is kind of why this is so interesting to us, because the scale at which law enforcement acted is unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the kind of news on the takedown, and it kind of news that I've read about the Lockbit takedown. They kind of talk that Lockbit had their own cyber incident. And the talks around similar, and Trend Micro has some kind of detection or had kind of beat detection on Lockbit version 3, or how did that go?
Yeah, so when we think about the security incident affecting Lockbit, there are a lot of ways to frame this. Yeah, being taken down by law enforcement, yeah, is a pretty big security incident, right? Because Lockbit kind of like the rest of its victims, Lockbit got taken down. You know, very funny that happened in kind of an ironic way. But yes, so as you're kind of saying, there's a couple things when people refer to this security incident or this leak that they're talking about. One could be, you know, the reason that Lockbit itself was allowed not only to be decrypted, but it leaked its own builder of what was Lockbit 4.0, right? So we're thinking about into the future. There was a developmental stage of Lockbit that was actively being worked on that did get into the hands of Trend Micro. Now, how did this happen? There's a lot of questions, right? Did Lockbit have a mole within its operations? Did it have someone that was working very closely with law enforcement, either working for Lockbit at the same time or were one of those affiliates, right? You know, you see the 194 affiliate accounts with all those placeholder names. Was one of those actually a law enforcement operative from the US, the UK, somewhere else in Europe that had access to Lockbit infrastructure and was masquerading as a Lockbit affiliate? Don't really know, right? We don't really know how exactly that builder got out. We don't really know how the infrastructure seizure took place, how they were able to get in. Lockbit themselves says that, you know, they were lazy in their patching, right, is what they said. They said in that statement that they were vulnerable to some PHP vulnerabilities, and this is how law enforcement took over. We don't know if that's true. It might be true. It might not be true. Again, cyber criminals are not authoritative sources. We can't really decide whether or not that PHP vulnerability that resulted in the leak was actually the reason law enforcement took them down. But it's interesting enough to know that Lockbit clearly was compromised. Now, what this will do as we talk about the future is this will sow distrust amongst people that have worked with Lockbit because, gosh, I mean, you're talking about affiliates that are going onto social media that are saying, you know, very famously, there was one 2 weeks ago that went onto social media and said, like, here is the proof of me talking to Lockbit. I got really nervous because someone from law enforcement was in my negotiation panel who was speaking to me. You know, this is going to be a kind of a wake-up call for a lot of affiliates, whether they're located in non-extradition countries like Russia or whether they're located anywhere around the world. You have to assume at some level that every part of Lockbit is compromised right now. You have to assume that its finances are compromised, its infrastructure is compromised. You have to assume that every negotiation you've ever had with a victim is in the hands of law enforcement. You have to know that they might know who you are. They might know your identity at this point, because if they have back-end access and you were very poor with your operational security, they might know physically where you're located. Every affiliate has to be concerned about this now. And the fact that we don't really know how this leak or this cyber incident affecting Lockbit took place, I think is strategic. I think keeping us in the dark publicly only foments these questions. It causes this stuff to fester within the organization so that if Lockbit tries to come back, it's going to have to rebuild trust amongst its current affiliates and be trusted enough, be credible on the cyber criminal underground to get new affiliates. And I don't think it can at this point.
Mm-hmm. But to talk about the market impact, let's call this a market impact.
Yeah.
So there is a, could this be considered as a vacuum in the marketplace, or what will happen or what has happened?
It's a good question. It's a good question. And I don't know, like, I think power vacuum or market vacuum, I think, is the best possible way to describe it. But I think it's a little misleading because, like, ransomware is not necessarily a crime of opportunity, right? It's not necessarily a crime of, like, desperation, a crime of, you know, a lot of petty crime is this, like, that we frame it in a way that, like, individuals conduct these crimes due to socioeconomic standing. They conduct these crimes in order to survive, in order to eat, in order to, like, fence products to sustain their living. Like, we don't really see ransomware acting like this. Ransomware is more of an active crime. It's not necessarily passive. It requires cyber criminals to go out and do this, like, out of malice. Like, they're doing this for a purpose to conduct harm for financial gain. So when we talk about, like, market share or power vacuum, it's not necessarily like the vacuum of the crime itself. Like, oh, there's demand for the crime itself. The crime itself must exist. Yeah. Therefore, like, others will fill it. But what we do see is, like, the vacuum of the affiliates. We now have hundreds and hundreds of cyber criminals that are out there that worked with Lockbit in some capacity that probably like their job as ransomware actors because they can make a lot of money doing it, relative likely to what they'd be making in Russia or other parts of the CIS, making millions of dollars per payment. They probably want to continue in cybercrime. Therefore, they're going to have to either start their own group or go somewhere else. So that vacuum has got to be filled by groups that are soliciting former Lockbit affiliates. Now, the problem that these affiliates are going to run into, kind of like what I discussed earlier with that distinction of open or closed groups, a lot of groups are closed now. A lot of law enforcement action has sown distrust within groups, and groups have sown distrust within themselves, right? We see after the war in Ukraine starts, we see Conti leak all of its internal chats, right? It's a security researcher that had infiltrated the group, had leaked all of the chats between all of the members. These groups are imploding within themselves, and they're being taken down by law enforcement. So groups are going to be naturally apprehensive to taking any recruits from other groups like Lockbit, because they're going to be like, okay, this person's compromised, clearly. Even if we do take them, who knows what law enforcement has on this moniker, on this specific individual? Does law enforcement have the whole team mapped out? Do they know exactly who this is? And then me, as Akira, 8Base, Black Suit, like any of these groups, am I going to take that risk, right? Am I going to take the risk of taking on an affiliate from Lockbit that I know probably is compromised by law enforcement? Probably not. So what we're going to start to see is, if those affiliates have nowhere to go, they're going to do one to two things. They're going to either rebrand entirely, right? So we can see Lockbit itself rebranding, or we can see groups like affiliates that are part of other ransomware groups rebrand in and of themselves. We could see them retire, just walk away. If you've made enough money, it might be time to disappear, hang it up for now. Or we might try to see them start their own groups, these affiliates banding together to start their own groups. Now the question is if you've been compromised, how long is that operation actually going to last? Probably not super long. If you've already been tracked by law enforcement, if you've already been taken down, I don't know. It might not seem like the best option for your security to be running around starting a new ransomware group right after you've just been compromised in your other ransomware group, right? It doesn't seem strategically like the best decision. So it might take a while for this to actually happen. And by a while, I mean like weeks to months before we start to see where this power shift actually takes place. Does it shift to pre-existing groups? Does Lockbit try to come back as Lockbit 4.0 or under a completely different rebrand? Do we see these affiliates go away entirely, maybe change their monikers on forums? Like, we don't really know until that happens. And that could be a long-term power shift.
Yes. So the kind of the buildup of the group was quite long. It established, and now also the breakdown takes some time. Well, as they say, when Coca-Cola would go out of business today, it would be on the streets for 100 years. So we would we would still know it's there. So the effects of Lockbit takedown are yet to unfold. And for sure. So like loads of people are out of job, we could say at this point, and it's up for them to retire if they continue or disappear. Yep. Just to put this into plain language. Yeah,
and I think, you know, a good case study to compare this to is, I've heard some people comparing it to Revol in Russia. Don't think that's necessarily the best parallel. I think it's good to compare this to the Conti ransomware group. So Conti was a Russian-speaking ransomware group that was the ransomware arm of a group that developed a malware called TrickBot. So Conti was at one point in late 2021 and early 2022 the single biggest ransomware group that was active. It had posted the most victims. It culturally was very important. It was culturally very important in the Russian-speaking cybercriminal underground. When Conti, splinters, there's a lot of reasons for this. Part of it is the leaks. Part of it is geopolitical pressure. Part of it's indictment pressure, like, some individuals were indicted, there was law enforcement action. Like there's a lot of things that happened there. So we won't go into that. But when Conti splinters, we are still feeling the fallout of that 2 years later, right? Because the leaks happened in February and March of 2022. It's now 2024, and we still are seeing new Conti splinter groups like Akira and Black Suit popping up. We are seeing Black Basta, which is responsible also for the development of Quackbot malware, come up and down based on law enforcement action. We are still seeing relative activity out of other Conti splinter groups, like groups that were repurposed, Black Byte, Quantum, groups like that, still active, right? But there's power shifts. These groups go through phases. They're developing new tools, new forms of their ransomware. These groups are coming up and down. I think about Royal Ransomware, which started as a kind of a splinter from Conti as Roy Zeon or Royal Zeon, which was started then as Zeon, which then became Royal Ransomware. And now the Zeon part of Royal Ransomware is now forming Akira. Like this whole thing is like it's very complicated. It's a crazy web. But we're 2 years into the Conti splintering and we still really don't know where it's going to settle. I think we're going to see a similar thing with Lockbit, where you have this massive cartel with a near monopoly on the market, a 20% market share, which is huge compared to all the ransomware groups out there, making hundreds of millions of dollars with hundreds of affiliates. Once that kind of breaks up, it's going to take a long time for the dust to settle because there is so much disruption. The scale of the disruption is so huge. It was why Evil Core was able to rebrand so quickly, because its core group was very small. It was very secretive. You can't really rebrand if you've got 500 affiliates working for you and, hundreds and hundreds of victims. Like, it's not really something to easily do. So it's going to take time. It's going to take weeks to months, if not years, to see where this goes. But it's going to have a lot of drama along the way. And I'm very excited to see what happens over the next couple of months. We've already gotten some of the drama. I think there's going to be more. Who knows? But like, it's a very exciting is the wrong term to use, because that puts a positive spin on it. But it's a very interesting situation that once we see over the next couple of months what happens, could fundamentally change the makeup of the ransomware threat landscape.
But yeah, that kind of brings us to the next point. You mentioned that there were two arrests by the order of French. By the order of French, Ukraine and then Poland. So the cyber criminals' number one possession is their identity.
Yep.
Once that is open, then the game is over. So, the group internals. Do we have an idea who the persons are? Where are they? Where do they operate? What are their backgrounds and things like that? What do we actually know about the identities and persons themselves?
Yeah, so we have a significant amount of identities that have been disclosed over the years in indictments and sanctioning documents. I guess to no one's surprise, the overwhelming majority of them are Russian nationals, or they are Russian nationals living in the West, living in the United States, Canada, and so forth. Lockbit SUP, the developer of Lockbit and its main administrator, will only speak Russian in interviews. It will only speak Russian on the forums. Generally understood that the group's internals, as to includes its affiliates, are either located in Russia or are located in, are Russian-speaking individuals located in the former Soviet Union. probably within the CIS, because generally speaking, if you're going to be looking at non-CIS former Soviet countries like Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia, they're going to be much more receptive to law enforcement actions. They're going to be much more collaborative with Western law enforcement, with the United States, with the NCA. Generally speaking, you're looking at countries like Russia, Belarus, and Central Asia. Like, that's generally kind of where we're looking geographically. But generally speaking, there's a reason for this. In the Russian-speaking cybercriminal underground, there is an unwritten rule that you will not be investigated and arrested if you are operating in Russia and you do not target entities in Russia. So generally speaking, this is understood as a sort of tacit approval. This is understood as kind of a form of indirect relationship between Russian security services and ransomware groups. We at Recorded Future call it the Dark Covenant, and there are a lot of reports that we've put out publicly on this exact topic, where ransomware groups, as long as they're located in Russia and they don't target Russia and they don't target the CIS, really, like, they don't target Belarus, they don't target Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, etc., then they will not be arrested, which incentivizes them naturally to target entities in the US, Canada, European Union, and Asia, so forth. So that's generally what we're looking at. We're looking at kind of the corpus, the critical mass of Lockbit likely located within Russia proper.
So all the traces go towards Russia. But you spoke many times about the statements, kind of public statements from Lockbit, and you also mentioned interviews and such. So do they have spokespersons, or how does this work?
Yes, so their primary spokesperson is that individual I mentioned earlier, Lockbit Sup, or short for Lockbit Support. This individual maintains a couple points of contact. They did maintain points of contact on dark web forums, Russian language dark web forums, but they've since all been banned. So can't really use the forum if you've been banned, and you can't really make a new account or also get banned again. But they do maintain an account on what's called Talks. It's a peer-to-peer messaging service, an open source messaging service. This is primarily their vector to speak to journalists, to researchers, to prospective affiliates. The question is do we know whether or not that's one individual behind that moniker? Is it multiple individuals that are logging in from different locations that are using the same moniker? We don't really know. But we assume that the core team of Lockbit, the core team of Lockbit support as well, is relatively small. Lockbit relies heavily on contractors. This is something that we understand about their business model, is that a lot of their tools, a lot of their infrastructure, a lot of their help in developing the malware itself was reliant on paying individuals from other ransomware groups. So like Lockbit Black, which is a form of Lockbit ransomware, was developed by a former developer of DarkSide, Black Matter, and Alpha Black Cat ransomware. We know this because this individual didn't get paid, and they complained on the forums that they didn't get paid by Lockbit. Kind of like what we talked about earlier, there's no contracts, so there's nothing you could really do about it. So generally speaking, that core team is very small. Do we know exactly who is operating Lockbit Sup? We don't, but we can assume it's got to be 1 to 3 individuals based on tone, based on language use, based on consistency of activities. That is a very insular team right there. The team itself, the professional team, the core team of Lockbit's very small. The contractors are small. Kind of where it becomes unwieldy is those affiliates. But generally speaking, this is a very close-knit operation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It has been really, really interesting to talk to you. I have just one last question for you, for the audience. So we're on the light side here. What actionable advice would you give to our listeners?
Yeah, this is a great question. First and foremost, there's nothing more important than awareness. whether that is awareness through education, through visibility, maintaining access to a threat intelligence provider, reading threat intelligence news, right? Like there's a ton of great news sources out there, The Record, CyberScoop, like keeping an eye on big events. Like awareness is really important. The reason I'm saying this is because there's a lot of actionable insights we can take. There's a lot of very specific tools and TTPs that, like, yeah, I could go on for days and say, make sure you have your detection rules up to date. Make sure that you're defending against certain MITRE attack TTPs that are known to be associated with Lockbit. Like, I can do that for a long time. It doesn't really matter if we don't know where this is going. And the only way we could know where this is going is to maintain visibility into ransomware victimology, into developments within the threat landscape, and work with your threat intelligence provider, follow threat intelligence providers, talk to independent researchers, talk to cybersecurity journalists, see where this is going in terms of who are major victims, what are new groups that are popping up. You know, we see dark web leak sites pop up all the time. We see groups pop up on forums all the time that are saying, I'm part of this ransomware group and here are my victims. That stuff is almost more important when it comes to maintaining situational awareness than it is for me to say, like, yes, some Lockbit affiliates install System BC to maintain persistence. Please detect for this tool. Doesn't really help, right? Like, I could be here for another hour talking about actionable, kind of those tactical defenses, but those tactical defenses won't really defend against something that we don't really know how it's going to develop over the next couple of weeks or months. So the best I can say right now is keep abreast of cybersecurity media, maintain visibility into the ransomware threat landscape, look at where the trends are going in terms of industry targets, country targets, which groups are targeting the most, which groups are causing a buzz within the media, which groups are we talking about here on podcasts, right? Like that is really important for maintaining situational awareness and understanding like what you need to prioritize in the future because, yeah, I can list off a couple ransomware groups right now, but will they become a threat to your organization? I don't know, right? So I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what this fallout is going to look like. I don't think anyone does right now. So really, education is the most important thing that I can emphasize right now.
So the key takeaway from this show, awareness. Awareness, yes. in all levels, in all levels across organizations and across organization and so forth. It has been really, really interesting talking to you, Alexander. If you like this show, yes, you, the listener there, then share, like, and write to me. Write to me, ronnie@cybers.eu. If there is anything specific you would like to hear, and I would really like to invite Alexander to our show next time as well. And maybe the kind of the Lockbit unwinds in a totally different direction, and we will have a courtroom drama.
Yes.
So we don't know. We don't know. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this was the episode of Lockbit Ransomware as a Service Platform. And although they were taken down for a period of time, then there are signs that they had recovery plan in place. So take this information from this episode and use it wisely. There are kind of three things that we can be sure now. That is death, taxes, and ransomware groupings. So we will meet in 2 weeks.